You're listening to Talking Architecture and Design, brought to you in association with the Architecture and Design Network. You can catch up with news, projects, interviews, and much more at architectureanddesign.com.au, where you can also subscribe to our newsletters and magazine. And today we have with us in our, dare I call it, our Hobart studio, we have Katie Rigg-Smith. Katie Rigg-Smith is the Chief Strategy Officer for WPP in Australia and New Zealand. WPP is the creative transformation company. I believe they were once called PR companies, weren't they, back in the old days. Using the power of creativity to build better futures for people, planet, clients, and, of course, communities. She spoke recently at Metrocon's National Conference about, down here in Hobart, of course, that's why we're here, about a range of concepts that we will be dealing with sooner or later than we thought, and I thought it would be a great idea to talk to her. So welcome to Talking Architecture and Design.
Thank you.
Katie Rigg-Smith.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. Okay, so can I ask, you spoke about the use of mycelium, something that we've written about as a building product. It has a range of amazing structural and thermal properties, is natural, sustainable, being a form of, I hate the word, but fungi, and is currently being used as a material to build everything from chairs, as you show, and walls. Do you think, which have amazing thermal properties, by the way, do you think as a species that builds many things, humans that is, we've lost connection with the natural world, and as such we should investigate if there are more similar types of natural products out there for sustainability and for, of course, for the bottom line, such as mycelium?
Thank you, firstly, for having me today, and 100%, and actually that's why I'm here at the Metrocon Masters Design Summit, is to actually look at what the future of Australia will be in 2030. And I don't come from a design or architect background, as we've talked about, but what I'm looking at are the trends that are going to impact us in the future. And one of those trends, 100%, is sustainability, and how do we look at ways of building a more sustainable future for us all. And mycelium is kind of the tip of the iceberg, or the mushroom, so to speak, bad pun, but it is that way of looking at different organic matter that can solve different solutions, different problems for us. And so for me, it is just an example of how when we use our ingenuity, we can find organic matter that will solve a problem and be used in a different way. And so I think that the future will see us looking for more and more of these type of solutions.
Interesting. You say you don't come from a design background, but you did mention an example. They wrap glass in mycelium and they drop it from height,
Well, something I was reading about the power of mycelium was saying that you could put a glass in it and drop it and the glass would stay, wouldn't break. So I don't know whether that's a myth or not, but it was one of the things saying why it was such an important product.
Right, okay, interesting. The other subject that you broached, which I found actually fascinating, and I've got to tell you, this is the first time I heard of it. I mean, first
Amazing.
Time I heard of it in Australia,
yep.
okay,
yep.
Is intergenerational living, which, you know, it'll be a wholesale, that is a wholesale change in the way we will design housing in Australia. Currently, you mentioned there are only, and it's still a lot, but only 350,000 people in multi-generational living, or as I think you call them, mega homes, like 8 bedrooms or more. That sounds like a Kyle Sandilands normal home. Anyway, but do you think that this is something that we'll be seeing more of, or to put it another way, is this something that we should be seeing more of, and how does this change the building sector in your opinion?
Well, I think that when you get to imagine what Australia could look like in the future, there's a data point that need to be really mindful of, and the fact that we are an ageing population. So in 2026, we will have over 22% of Australians will be over the age of 65.
Wow.
And so I think we need to start considering, what does the future of our homes look like if we have an ageing population? I think in the 1970s, there was 8 workers to every 1 retiree, and I think it's set to be 3 workers to every 1 retiree. So we obviously need to also figure out ways to fund it. And we have a society that are potentially wanting to find solutions to having their family around them, but maybe not all in the same room. So what could intergenerational with 3 generations in 1 home look like? And how could we make it part of inner urban areas, not just the idea of big blocks of land, but what does designs look like where it could sit in inner areas? I think it's a big conversation we need to have, and then off the back of it, we need to have conversations about what do insurance look like for multi-generations, how do home loans play out across multi-generations. What does the electricity grid look like? But it really, I would love Australia to have this conversation, because I do think there is an opportunity for us to reframe what we have as aged care and what we have as intergenerational living.
And there could well be other flow-ons, couldn't there? You know, if you've got grandma cooking for you every day, there goes Uber.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. But also you have on the other end of the spectrum, you have families that really love the help. I know, I must admit, my mum, my beautiful mum, was at my house this morning to make sure that my husband was able to. He's amazing too, but he had to get three children, very young children, out the door. So she drove over just to make sure that she could help. And I think that if you have that living with you, that's another benefit.
Well, true. And as you just pointed out, it does take pressure of other sectors, which are under pressure, are childcare.
Absolutely.
For example, that's one comes up every few months in the media.
And I think that we also see that we are now a migrant majority community as a country, which is so wonderful. We are the first English-speaking migrant majority, with over 51.5% of Australians being either first or second generation. And there are certain cultures that really want access to having that type of intergenerational living. So it'll be interesting to see the different cultural diversity that plays out in Australia in the next 5 to 10 years and the type of inventory that people are after. As you mentioned, the ABS have said that there are 355,000 people living in multi-generational homes. But I also wonder, is that because there isn't enough inventory to accommodate people wanting it? So it'll be an interesting one to see.
Yes, I just can't wait to ring up my mother-in-law and ask her to move in. I was going to say, lastly, you spoke about something that's sort of close to my heart, and it's work from home. Do you think that this is one way that we can help lower our carbon footprint while also improving that elusive, that holy grail of the work-life balance?
I think that COVID has taught us that we can absolutely work from home and that we can function in that way. So I think it's taught that businesses will continue and continue on while working from home. I think there is definitely a need for hybrid working opportunities, people to be able to go into the office, work from home as they want. And the thing that we were talking a little bit at the Masters of Design Summit was also the idea of businesses from home. So not just work from home that's set up as a working office, but what do people's businesses, if 2.5 million businesses in Australia are small business with 0 to 19 employees, what does potentially having that within your home look like? How are homes going to facilitate that in the future?
Interesting. Getting back to what I said about taking pressure off sectors that are under pressure.
Yeah.
That also helps with transport.
Yeah.
It also, again, getting back to carbon footprint.
Yeah.
And it helps, dare I say, in my mind anyway, it helps with, sort of the well-being.
Absolutely.
I, for example, couldn't imagine not working without my dog.
There you go.
So, and I'm sure there are a lot of other people like this. So do you think maybe the whole pandemic had a bit of a silver lining?
It definitely taught us that we can work from home, we can work anywhere, and that people will still connect and make things happen. So, yes, it definitely did. And it really did fast-track us to that ability to having work-from-home setups. I think where we still probably need to consider as we go into the future is how you delineate between your work life in your home space. And if people don't have the luxury potentially of having a study, how do they create the mental health and well-being to create sectionalized parts of their day where they're like, I've finished working and now I'm with my family, or now I'm just being me. So I think that that's one thing the homes will have to be flexible in and adapt into, how you create those spaces that might be multi-purpose for people that aren't potentially in homes that have a big work from home space.
Interesting. You said adapt. That's what Darwin said, what makes a successful species. Yeah. Katie Riggs-Smith, Chief Strategy Officer for WPP, Australia New Zealand, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure we shall talk again.
Amazing.
You've been listening to Talking Architecture and Design. This is Branko Miletic. Until next time, goodbye. Thanks for listening to Talking Architecture and Design, brought to you in association with the Architecture and Design Network. You can catch up with news, projects, interviews, and much more at architectureanddesign.com.au, where you can also subscribe to our newsletters and magazine.